call the Eastern Municipal Water District Board of Directors to order. This being our regular meeting for March 5th, 2020, time being 9 a.m. Call to order. Director Corona, would you lead us in the flag salute, please?
Please face the flag.
May I begin?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
All right, go to agenda item one, which is reserved for public comments, and it's any subject within the jurisdiction of EMWD. The speakers are required to limit their comments to 3 minutes. I didn't know if there's anyone on the, no one in the audience has raised their hand, and if there's anyone on the phone call today that would like to address the board. Hearing none, we'll go to agenda item two, which is the public hearing. This is a time and place set for a duly authorized and noticed public hearing regarding a proposed amended and restated rate and method of apportionment of special tax for Community Facilities District Number 2013-63, the Belterre Improvement Areas B, C, and D of Eastern Municipal Water District, and the intention to consider amending the boundaries for improvement areas B, C, D, and E. Notice of this public hearing has been published in accordance with the law. I declare this public hearing open and would ask for a staff report on the proposed action.
EMWD has received a signed petition by Diamond Valley LLC requesting that the board consider an amended and restated rate and method of apportionment of special tax for Community Facilities District Number 2013-63, Belterre Improvement Areas B through D, and amended boundary maps for Improvement Areas B through E. Diamond Valley LLC is the sole landowner of the project, owning 100% of the taxable property within the boundaries of Improvement Areas B, C, D, and E. The project is located in French Valley, east of Washington Street and south of Keller Road. On March 18th, 2020, the board adopted resolution number 2020-52, declaring its intention to consider an amendment to the rate and methods of apportionment for improvement areas B through D, and an amendment for boundaries for improvement areas B through E. The amendment will increase the special tax rates within improvement areas B through D, but will not increase the board approved not to exceed bonded indebtedness amounts of $8 million for improvement area B, $6 million for improvement area C, and $12 million for improvement area D. The increase in the special tax rates is supported by the changes in the size of the product. The homes within these improvement areas were originally planned to be smaller when the CFD was formed in 2014, but the project has since been updated to include larger homes on larger lots. Based on the estimated valuation for the homes within this area, the 2% effective tax rate will be maintained. The board has received and reviewed a CFD report for the CFD prepared by Webb Municipal Finance LLC, which is hereby entered into the record of this public hearing.
I would ask the Secretary of the Board how this hearing was noticed.
Notice of the public hearing was published on April 29th, 2020 in the Press Enterprise, a newspaper circulated within the CFD boundary in accordance with the Mellow Ruse Community Facilities Act of 1982.
If the Secretary of the Board has received any written protest to the proposal, I'd ask her to provide copies thereof to the board.
No written protest to the proposal have been received.
Thank you. At this time, are there any members of the public who wish to speak on this matter? If so, come forward to the podium or the phone, state your name and address for the record, and present your comments. Hearing none and seeing none, at this time, we're ready to adopt the following resolutions. Resolution approving an amendment to the rate and methods of apportionment of special tax for CFD 2013-63 Belterre Improvement Areas B, C, and D, amending the boundaries for the improvement areas B, C, D, and E, and calling an election thereon. I will accept a motion and a second to adopt this resolution.
Mr. President, I'll make the motion.
Second.
been moved and seconded. The resolution we have, we need a roll call vote.
That's correct, Mr. President.
Thank you.
Okay. Director Sullivan?
Aye.
Director Pauley?
Aye.
Director Corona?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Record?
Aye.
Okay, the resolution we have just adopted authorizes and amended the restated rate and method of apportionment attached to resolution number 2020-52, approves an amendment to the boundaries of improvement districts B through E, and calls an election within CFD number 2013-63, improvement areas B through E, to be held at this time by the Secretary.
All ballots have been cast in connection with the election for Community Facilities District number 2013-63, Bellatary, improvement areas B through E of Eastern Municipal Water District, and the election has now been closed. The results of said election, which includes the number of votes cast for and against propositions A and B within improvement areas B, C, D, and E, was unanimous in favor of all propositions.
Having heard the statement of the Secretary certifying the results and voting on the propositions, I will entertain a motion to adopt. Certifying we have a motion and a second.
I'll make the motion, Mr. President.
Second.
Been moved and seconded. Have a roll call, please.
Director Sullivan?
Aye.
Director Pauley?
Aye.
Director Corona?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Record?
Aye.
Motion passes unanimously. Certifying the results of the...
Mr. Chair, I just wanted to confirm that resolution that was just voted on was a resolution certifying the results of the May 6th, 2020 election within CFD number 2013-63, Bell Terry, of Eastern Municipal Water District. I just
want
to confirm that for the record.
Thank you. That we have that this resolution has passed. And this concludes the public hearing. We will now return to the next item on our agenda. With that, we'll go to agenda item 3, which is our reports. Paul?
Thank you, President Sullivan, members of the board, good morning. My written report's included in your package. The first thing I have on the agenda, as many of the board members were aware, over the last weekend, there was a major interruption of service because of a break on the Santa Ana Valley Pipeline, and Metropolitan informed us of this on April 30th. Nick has a full presentation that he'll provide on this, but needless to say, our staff from Water Operations, Maintenance, Public Affairs, and Customer Service, along with our management team, had to coordinate a full emergency response and outreach effort, and service was restored, I'm happy to say, on Sunday, May 3rd, without any interruptions, but Nick has more details on that. And directors Record and Slauson, we emailed that presentation, which Nick will give during his report to you, so you have that for reference. The second item on my list of reported items pertains to SAPA. Yesterday, SAPA had its PA24 committee meeting to consider rates and charges for the brine line for the upcoming fiscal year. There were five options presented for consideration by the committee. And in addition to that, there was information provided not only on the budget, but also on SAPA's reserves. This was requested by the PA24 committee. SAPA has nine different reserve categories, and they have a total of $51.9 million in reserves. It's somewhat higher than the $43.7 million that was projected at the end of the year. And so the PA24 committee wanted to have that information in consideration and its deliberations on the rate options. As a result of a desire for many of the committee members to look at potentially mitigating short-term expense increases, and because of a very robust reserve balance, the PA24 committee unanimously voted to defer the rate increase on the brine line for the brine line services, which is approximately 4%, until January 1st of 2021. So essentially, it'll be deferred a 6-month. I think what also came out of the action that was interesting was the committee requested that information be brought back to the committee and the commission before the end of the calendar year to really do a comprehensive reevaluation of all the reserve categories, the reserve policies, and the target amounts that are in the reserves. There are clearly some reserve categories in there that are not contemporary anymore with SAPA's current operations, and they need to be reconsidered. So as required under the PA-24 agreement, the committee's actions will now be taken to the full SAPA commission for consideration on the May 22nd meeting. On past and ongoing activities, I do want to update the board regarding our current paid work-at-home status and other changes we've had in work practices here in response to COVID-19. As the board's aware, at the present time, federal, state, and county officials have not fully rescinded stay-at-home orders, although recently, at May 4th, Governor Newsom indicated that there would be some reopening of some businesses. That may begin this week. He has a press conference scheduled for this Thursday. Additionally, yesterday, the Riverside County Board of Supervisors had a somewhat marathon meeting to consider modifications of their current county health orders, and they have did not make final decisions. They have a meeting that's rescheduled, an emergency meeting this Friday at 1 p.m., hopefully to provide additional guidance and make those decisions. But as a result of this, last week, our executive management team extended our current paid work-from-home status for approximately 280 employees until May 18th at this point. And we continue to do this at 2-week increments because things are changing so rapidly. To date, I think our staff have done an outstanding job. We're conducting business very effectively and efficiently. But in anticipation of a kind of a moderation of those stay-at-home orders in the future by the county and state, now, we have begun the development of a plan for transitioning employees back to work. That plan's being put together with direct input from the managers and supervisors, and we're really going to consider several things. One, we're going to look at what sort of on-site modifications we want to make to staff's working environments, look at staggering shifts and continuing with that. Looking at continued remote work opportunities for many of the employees who can do that. And also, and very importantly, we really need to look at the employees' personal circumstances. I mean, the school districts are not going to be reopening anytime soon, and so we have employees that have child care because responsibilities because of the closed schools or no summer programs. So all that will be taken into consideration in the transition plan. We're also looking at plans and procedures for reopening the district's lobbies. Those have been closed. If we look and we've all been to the grocery store, Home Depot, they have procedures in place, which I think are very effective and have been good. So we're looking at implementing those when the time is right here at the district. And Doug Heffley is taking charge on that. So the specific timing of this, we'll communicate with the board, but I want to let you know we are watching this very closely and have a transition plan that we're developing as we speak. Other items of interest to the board, more globally, in a weekly report last week, we reported on the Supreme Court ruling on the so-called Maui decision. And you say, well, how does that pertain to Eastern Municipal Water District? But on April 23rd, the court issued a decision pertaining to the discharge of treated wastewater into groundwater that has an indirect hydraulic connection to waters of the U.S. And specifically, this pertained to a case brought against Maui by the Hawaii Wildlife Fund. It's interesting, there's a 4 million gallon a day treatment plant in Lahaina in Maui that has 4 injection wells that are a half mile from the ocean, and they inject the wastewater, the treated wastewater, into the injection wells, and then it goes and is basically discharged into the ocean through a subsurface discharge. The lawsuit essentially brought against this Maui was that this is essentially a discharge into a waters of the U.S. because of the hydraulic connection. Indeed, the U.S. Supreme Court found that if there is a functional equivalent of a direct discharge, that it needs to be regulated as a surface water discharge, and an NPDES has to be sought and issued because of what they call a functional equivalency. So how does this pertain to Eastern? We have several recycled water ponds that are next to waters of the U.S. There's potential leakage out of those ponds that could make it into those river systems potentially, or that could be shown perhaps. And so we're also pursuing a potable reuse project that injects essentially highly treated wastewater into the groundwater basin. So these are things that could have indirect impacts on those projects, particularly in the water recycling space. So we'll be monitoring this very closely. The Supreme Court did provide guidance that EPA could issue individual general permits and provide guidance through those permits or through a rulemaking process. So we'll be engaging with EPA very closely on this issue because it does have potential ramifications to EMWD and its operations. Other items of interest to the board, we've been coordinating with the Association of California Water Agencies and CMUA, California Municipal Utilities Association, on a couple of legislative and policy-related initiatives that are COVID-19 related, particularly with respect to shutoffs and restoration of service. The legislature is starting to get into the act, the state board's getting into the act a little bit, and we're trying to respond appropriately with good guidance. Specifically, and for one example, is a bill that's been recently introduced would add additional costs, of course, to water agencies. The bill is AB 2887 by Bonta. It's statewide emergencies mitigation, and essentially it would extend the current moratorium on water shutoffs that were issued by the governor to any future state emergency. So in other words, anytime the state declared a state of emergency, no matter where it was in the state, there'd be a moratorium on water shutoffs. So again, that's one thing we're continuing to work with CMUA to oppose. Similarly, the state board is getting into the act as well. They issued on April 30th what they call best practice guidelines for water and wastewater agencies and recommended practices that are very, very detailed on how we handle customer service, payment plans, customer communications, and other retail agency responsibilities. Why these are just guidelines, you obviously be concerned that the state board who micromanaged us through the last drought may really become overbearing on how we manage our shutoffs. We looked at their guidelines and we comply with the vast majority of them, but several of them were just not, for example, data requirements that we need to report to the state board that they'd like to have. We don't have the capability to pull it out of our billing system. And there were a number of other issues. So we identified those for Aqua, and Aqua is using those to work with the state board. And I only bring this up because I think we're gonna see a bit of a flurry of both bills and regulations related to shutoffs. It was interesting, one of the state board staff members on his personal social media site talked about how this is a long time coming and we need to have big reforms on water agencies' ability to charge customers late fees and shut people off and so forth. And so I think we're really gonna see an onslaught of these things. So I wanna let you know that the staff is preparing and we're very engaged when anything like this comes up. The last item I'd like to report on is we've taken a support position on a bill that really was generated here in the Santa Ana River watershed area and was sponsored by Orange County Water District, and that's AB 2560 by Quirk. And this deals with the promulgation of notification levels and response levels by the Department of Drinking Water. As you know, on the PFAS, this has been a little bit of an opaque process. As you recall when we briefed the board on this, the current notification level and response levels were derived from a single rodent study that was somewhat questionable and was not peer-reviewed, and the process for promulgating the notification and response levels was not as clear and transparent as it could have been. So Orange County Water District has put together this bill. They also asked for input, obviously, from the other SAPA members. And it really seeks to resolve this transparency concerns between the state regulators and the regulated community. Very good bill. It's getting a lot of positive feedback. And they also picked the right author. The bill is set for hearing on May 14th in the Assembly Environmental Safety and Toxic Materials Committee. It's great because the chair of the committee is also the bill author. So that's why it's being prioritized through. And so hopefully this will make it through this year. And really, we'll get some meaningful change on the regulatory front. So with that, that concludes my report, unless there are any questions.
Any questions? Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Laura.
Just quickly, I think you'll notice on the dais there you have some new displays. That's a result of pretty much completion of our boardroom electronics upgrade project that the board approved a couple months ago. The project will improve our video display. Hopefully you'll be able to not have to turn and tweak your necks to see the presentations. The audio will be much more improved, so hopefully our audience today on the phone can give me feedback and let me know if they can hear us better. And just the audio recording that we do will be much improved as well. So we're really excited about it, and we really appreciate the approval by the board and then the work that was done by IS. They jumped on it right after the last board meeting to get it completed by this board meeting. So thank you to Mike Malone and his staff.
Excellent. Much.
I think it really does make a difference here in what you see up here.
Yes. Yeah. Very nice. Thank you very much.
Yes.
Nick.
Thank you. As Paul had mentioned, I'd like to give you a little more of a deeper dive into the excitement that we were dealing with over this past weekend associated with the leak that occurred on the Santa Ana Valley pipeline. I have a few slides here. Directors Slauson and Record, I believe the slides have been emailed to you. Do you have those available? And I can refer to slide numbers as I go through this.
I have them, Nick.
Great.
Yeah,
perfect. Okay, well, I'm going to go to slide two here. So slide two, there's a graphic there, a map that, like you refer to, give you kind of a overview and an orientation of the Santa Ana Valley pipeline. If I can find the cursor, which
there
I'm
is,
not.
It's right there.
It's way too sensitive. Okay, looking at the map here, the Santa Ana Valley pipeline is the thin blue line that starts in the top left-hand corner, the northwest, and it traverses across the graphic to the bottom right-hand corner. The pipeline is a 9-foot diameter pre-stressed concrete cylinder pipe. It's owned and operated by the California Department of Water Resources, and it transports water from Northern California, and it flows all the way down to the south to the Lake Paris. Metropolitan Water District has a connection to that pipe in the Box Springs area. Sorry, just lost the graphic here. There's a connection to this pipeline. Okay, looks like we're having some. There we go. Metropolitan has a connection in the Box Springs area. It's the Box Springs feeder that connects to the Santa Ana Valley pipeline, and it feeds water to the Mills water treatment plant. And the location of that connection, as it says, in the Box Springs area in Moreno Valley, circled in yellow is the location where the leak occurred on late Thursday afternoon. And I've got to blow up to show you what's going on in that area, but it's right at close to the intersection of the 215 and the 60, just west of the Moreno Valley shopping mall. I seem to be having problems with the, there we go. So slide three, this is a close-up of the pipeline, again, shown in blue, light blue. It goes from north to south, and the leak occurred right in front of the LA Fitness parking lot. So on Thursday, April 30th, we were informed by Metropolitan Water District that a potholing contractor, this is a third-party independent potholing contractor, had accidentally hit the Santa Ana Valley Pipeline. I've learned that they were potholing. They actually drilled straight through this 9-foot diameter pipeline. And as a result, there was a leak, and the pipeline had to be shut down. And in turn, Mills Water Treatment Plant lost its feed water, and in turn had to shut down. At that time, Mills Clearwell storage was at about 50%. They have a 40 million gallon Clearwell reservoir there, and they were at about 20 million gallons. Also, Eastern's water storage in the Moreno Valley area at that time was at about 45%, which is typically where we would want to be, but not prior to an emergency like this and a 3-day shutdown. So given the circumstances that we weren't receiving water from Mills, which is our sole supplier for the northern area of the district service area, we were in serious risk of water supply shortages, not only to ourselves, but Western, and potentially, depending how long this lasts, I mean, we could be looking at some water outages.
Hey, Nick, can I ask a quick question?
Absolutely.
Was the pipeline just not marked on anybody's map, or was this just they were careless in what they were doing?
Well, DWR is still investigating exactly what happened. You would have thought that a 9-foot diameter pipeline would have been clearly marked and known, and this should not have occurred. So I don't have the details exactly what happened or who exactly that contractor was, but they were potholing for some utility installation, and you would have thought that this should not have happened.
Okay, thank you.
So slide 4 is a closer view of what was going on and where the location of the pipeline and the Box Springs feeder to Mills. The red highlight is I believe it's just highlighting Mills right away or easement associated with their feeder that comes off of the Santa Ana Valley pipeline. So there was obviously immediate response by a number of teams and agencies, including DWR, Metropolitan, Eastern, Western, to address this event. And DWR's repair plan and their scope and responsibility was really broken into two phases. The first phase would be to put in place an interim solution to isolate the leak and then backfeed water to the Mills Water Treatment Plant. So again, the leak is highlighted in that yellow circle just outside LA Fitness. South of there is a valve vault on the pipeline that has a pipe spool piece in that, in an emergency such as this, that spool piece can be removed and a bulkhead can be installed. And that was the first phase of the plan, was to put this bulkhead in, was to dewater the line, put this bulkhead in, isolate the leak, and then backfill the Santa Ana Valley pipeline and the Mills Water Treatment Plant with water that would then flow north from Lake Paris area. And then phase 2 of the plan is once that bulkhead was in place, then DWR could then move forward with the permanent repairs to the rupture of their pipeline, and that's ongoing as we speak now. So over the 3-day period, starting from Thursday, late Thursday afternoon, all the way through Sunday evening, that's exactly what happened. DWR immediately mobilized, and they conducted a 24-hour operation for those few days in which they dewatered the pipeline, installed the bulkhead, and then late Sunday evening was able to successfully backfeed and recharge the pipeline and get some flow moving to Mills Treatment Plant, albeit at a reduced capacity. 110 CFS is what is now moving to Mills. It's about 40 to 50% of what we would typically expect, but it's enough water to feed Mills and now get water back into Eastern and Western's service area. Parallel to DWR's effort, there was effort on the part of Eastern and Western coordinating with Metropolitan to address our operational and public relations issues throughout those 3 days. I think we have. I'm trying to advance this slide. Getting anything? Can you help me, Melissa? So EMWD's response was twofold. There was extraordinary responses from operationally to maintain water service, and extraordinary responses for public outreach to communicate to our customers what was going and what we needed from them in partnership to get through this. Operationally, again, this was a 24-hour-a-day response over those three days. And some of the measures that were implemented included initially increasing deliveries from Mills plant to try and get as much water in storage in the area that we could. When we would immediately notify that Mills was going down, there was still a little bit of water available. There was water in the Clearwell. So we drew some of that to a point where everybody was comfortable. And then we maintained a limited reserve of water in Mills Clearwell as a last resort if we had to go there and share that water with Western. We increased, the approach was essentially to produce as much water and get as much water into our system and storage as possible, and then also to find every opportunity to increase our pumping capability to move water from the south to the north. And our system is fairly limited in ability to do that, but I'll explain some very aggressive and creative measures that were taken. So we maximized the amount of water that we could take from Skinner, and then we maximized production, which essentially entailed increasing to full capacity both Paris and Hemet filtration plants, maximizing our desalter facilities, and increasing our groundwater well production, again, to get as much water into the system as we could. Additionally, we looked for opportunity to, again, increase our pumping capability of moving that water north. And I'd like to highlight a few facilities that we addressed. There were three pumping, booster pumping stations that were essential in allowing us to do that. That was Pettit, Pat Road, and Oleander. Pettit, we had just recently completed some upgrades and installed some new VFDs. We've typically, there's three pumps at that station. We typically just run one. However, water operations, given the circumstances, they said, hey, with these new VFDs, we should be able to run two pumps. They ran two. That was successful. We ended up increasing flows from the normal 10 CFS to about 18 CFS. Everything was looking really good. So they said, hey, let's try and get the third pump online, and we were successful to push it up to 25 CFS. We've never pushed that much water north from that station before, and that was a real critical measure in allowing us to deal with this. Pat Road booster pump station, we are in the middle of improvements and some maintenance activities there, so we had a number of pumps and engines down for rebuild. We had a lot of the new parts there, but it hadn't been installed. So in an emergency effort, we brought all the resources we could, and we pretty much put everything back together that night and the following morning to get that station back online. Oleander booster station, we have actually an emergency connection there, and we were able to immediately deploy a mobile pump setup to augment the pumping capabilities. It's a trailer-mounted pump and power setup. Our operations teams have coined it a fast action response trailer. I'll let you figure out what that acronym is. But they put that in place. We're pushing water up there. But just to demonstrate how one emergency can just evolve into other emergencies, it was early Sunday morning, around about 2 o'clock in the morning, we get word that somebody hit a fire hydrant just outside the Oleander booster station, and that gush of water ended up hitting a pole-mounted electrical transformer and wiping out power to that station. So that station went down, but fortunately we had our fast action response trailer in place, so we were able to continue to pump north. So, in addition, the last bullet there is we also, to help out Western Municipal Water District, we have an emergency connection. It's the Barton-Nandina connection, and we were able to put that in place immediately. It requires us to go out there. Our operations and maintenance team have to install some piping, do some back tee testing. All that was done very rapidly, and we were able to push an additional 5 CFS over to Western, which they were very appreciative for, because they were a lot more vulnerable than we were. So that was the some of the highlights of the operational. If we can go on to slide 7 here. But parallel to that, and just as critical, was our public outreach effort. So carefully coordinating with PGA through April, Roxanne, we immediately reached out to the community. The goal was not only to move as much water into the service area as necessary, but to curtail water demand. And basically what we were asking the community throughout Moreno Valley was to eliminate, stop any outdoor irrigation watering. So that was the key messaging, and we did that in a number of different ways. We partnered with press releases, partnered with Metropolitan and Western on press releases associated with that. Website emergency alert banners were implemented. We went out with a reverse 911 calls in both English and Spanish, again, requesting that they stop that outdoor watering. E-blast went out. Direct phone contact with some of our larger users, industrial users, and we actually made face-to-face contact with many developers and contractors who had ongoing projects with a lot of construction watering going on. That was a big draw, and we got a lot of cooperation from our customers to back off on that watering. Slide 8, please. Additionally, a key partner in this was the City of Moreno Valley. They responded very, very rapidly to mimic a lot of our messaging and back off and watering of many of their facilities. And as a result of this, we were able to curtail that watering, reduce those demands, but at the same time increase our supply. And then finally, once the interim improvements for DWR that put in to isolate that leak and backfill mills that occurred on Sunday, we immediately reached out to our community and our customers to let them know that we had successfully got through this weekend effort that we were anticipating, and a number of thank yous have gone out and been placed on social media. Next slide, please. Slide 9. But as I said, that was really just the phase one of the response plan. So we're not done yet. As we speak, Department of Water Resources are conducting their permanent repairs to that line. Not too sure exactly what that'll entail. There'll obviously a patch of the rupture to the pipeline. Pre-stressed concrete tanks are very sensitive once you damage them and you cut some of those stressing strands. Can have a tendency to continue to unwind, and you get a catastrophic break. So they'll put an appropriate patch on that, and I would imagine that we're going to look at a full concrete encasement. But I don't have those details. But it's a major repair on this 9-foot diameter pipe. At the time I put this together, we had received feedback from DWR that they estimated it would take about 2 weeks to conduct that repair. And once that's in place, then we could start the process of unwinding and removing the bulkhead and going back to normal operations. But just as I was getting up here, I got a message from our water ops folks to say that DWR has reached out and said that things are going better and faster than they anticipated, and they're potentially looking at removing that bulkhead in just about a week from now, but it'll be a planned, coordinated shutdown to allow that to happen. And between now and then, and we are working closely with Metropol and others to recover from this event. We want to make sure that we top up our storage to the fullest extent that we can. We want to make sure that we've got all the facilities in place and our production again, water production ramped up and our pumping capabilities in place, so that this will not be, you know, an emergency operation. This will be a planned shutdown and a return to normal. So we're not anticipating any impacts to our customers or the need for any water conservation to allow us to do this. So this has been an extraordinary effort. Next slide, please. That involved a lot of people and a lot of different agencies. It was us, Western Metropolitan, DWR, City of Moreno Valley. It was amazing how everybody came together. Internally here at Eastern, we had operations teams involved, maintenance teams involved for new facilities, public government affairs with the outreach. Customer services were supporting this effort, ensuring that we had the right people and enough people in place to respond to the calls that were coming in. Planning and engineering was working behind the scenes, modeling our system, looking at, you know, potentially what we need to do and focus on to be successful. So extraordinary effort. But I do want to highlight John Dottinga, water operations manager, really stepped up to the moment, as well as Dave Brown, director of maintenance, ensuring that our system was working to its fullest capability. And then Roxanne Roundtree was phenomenal, 24 hours a day over a three-day period. She was out there communicating, press releases, coordinating with the other agencies, such as Met, DWR, Weston, and the City of Moreno. So once again, I'm proud to say that, you know, at the time, Eastern rose to the challenge, and it was a really good outcome. Any questions?
How big was the hole?
The hole, I can only imagine it was a potholing operation where they're essentially just drilling a small hole to verify utilities. It's usually in the order of only, you know, 6 to 8 inch diameter. I'm just guessing here. I wasn't given any specifics, but I was told they were augering down for the potholing. I guess they were going fairly deep, because what I heard is that they hit the pipe and they just kept going and punctured a hole straight through it. Initially, the leak was about 15 CFS. One of the questions that was asked early on is, okay, well, can we just live with this leak until, you know, and lose that water, but, you know, continue to live with it until we get the water in place and we get our production to where it needs to be. But again, this is a pre-stressed 9-foot diameter pre-stressed concrete pipe. It's very vulnerable to damage such as this. You end up cutting those pre-stressing strands around the pipe. It could suddenly rapidly unwind, and you could have a catastrophic break of that. So the decision was no, that was not an option. It had to be shut down immediately.
And also, Director Corona, the leak increased from 15, didn't it, to about 25 CFS pretty quickly. And so a decision was made they didn't want to take that risk.
Questions?
I think there's a question on the phone.
Yeah, I would just comment also, it just shows the ingenuity that is effective here at Eastern to ramp up something that actually is on an emergency basis, and we, you know, something that you don't plan for, and knowing, you know, from what I got from Paul during this episode was, it was just incredible what the district was able to accomplish. And then also, on a very quiet basis, I know that Western Municipal Water District was eternally grateful to be able to get 5 CFS through, which actually saved them from a a water outage on some people that are can be very vocal. And so my hats off to district and Nick and everybody and Jeff and everybody that was associated with this incredible feat.
Yeah, President Sullivan, I feel the same way. I think it was a great effort by everyone. And I go back to what Derek and Polly mentioned or questioned. What the hell happened? I'm very interested to see what did happen. I mean, where was USA? Who was this contractor? I just can't believe in today's world that this could happen. But great job by everyone.
Yes, we're continuing to follow up with MED and DWR, and we're very much interested in knowing the details. And internally, we'll be doing a hot wash gathering where we'll bring our teams together to really understand what happened, compare notes, and see what went well, and a lot went well. But then there's a lot of questions as to how this could have been avoided, and maybe what we could have done better in the future, or maybe measures that we could put in place so that we can be even more effective next time around. So hopefully we'll have those answers, Director Record, for you soon.
And after we do our internal review and hot wash, I spoke to Craig Miller at Western. We're going to meet with them, and their team is doing the same thing to kind of compare notes and make sure we're coordinated on that.
Okay. Nick, thank you very much. Great presentation. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Joe.
Good morning, Mr. President, members of the board. Just one item today. I'm pleased to share with you that the Construction Management Association of America San Diego chapter has selected EMWD's Temecula Valley Reclamation Plant Construction Expansion Project as Project of the Year. We're very pleased with the recognition. It's really a reflection by the entire EMWD team to bring to a successful completion a $80 million construction project. There will be an event in late August down in San Diego that we plan to attend where we will be receiving the award.
Super. Is Jeff with us this morning, or is he on site at the...
Jeff is out of town.
He's out of town.
On a personal matter.
Okay. All right. Okay. With that, we'll go to agenda item 4, which is the consent calendar. We'll accept a motion and a second for approval of items 4A through 4G, unless there's anyone wishing to pull an item.
I'll make a motion to approve item 4 on our agenda.
I'll second.
It's been moved and seconded. Roll call, please.
Director Sullivan?
Aye.
Director Polly?
Aye.
Director Corona?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Record?
Aye.
Motion passes unanimously. Thank you. We'll go to agenda item 5, which is the action calendar. 5A is to approve and authorize an agreement with Corollo Engineering for engineers for $374,405 for the Moreno Valley Regional Water Reclamation Facilities Flow Diversion and Centrate Conveyance Project Preliminary and Final Design, and appropriation in the amount of $524,035. Eric.
Good morning. Thank you. And underneath this mask is a very big smile, because I'm very glad to be here this morning. The presentation this morning, could I have a... There we go. Good. The includes background information. Thank you. Information on the selection process for the engineer for the project, the scope of work that will be performed by the engineer, our proposed schedule, and also a recommendation for the board. Not working yet. Thank you. This slide shows an image of the Moreno Valley Regional Water Reclamation Facility. You can see on the left, in the middle of the page, is the Plant 1 operating area, and on the bottom right is the Plant 2 operating area. Back in 2015, we did a facilities master plan for all four of our regional water reclamation facilities, including this facility, and the major emphasis was to plan projects and to defer major expansions for projects, and also recognize that conservation is having an impact on the influent coming into our treatment plants. We identified that we would need to address increase in nutrients such as nitrogen in the form of ammonia. And we also, over time, developed projects to address condition assessment to protect the investment in our facilities. And you may recall we've approached you in the past recently for MCC replacement projects and also the Plant 2B equipping project. And this project, which is the Marina Valley Centrate Conveyance and Flow Diversion Project, takes advantage of the Plant 2B equipping project to deliver some of the projects that were planned in the 2015 master plan. If I could go back one slide, please. Thank you. Under the Plant 2B equipping project, which you previously approved for design, we're installing a CARB vessel, which is a centrate and RAS re-aeration basin. And within that basin, we have a vessel that where centrate will be equalized. And we're taking advantage under this project to incorporate and complete one of our missions, which was centrate equalization, and also to provide flow diversion, which allows us to send high volumes of flow from the Marina Valley facility to the Paris Valley facility to take capacity of multiple plants. Slide 5, please. The Marina Valley facility already has flow diversion capability, but as you can see on the image on the right, which is a meter vault, that most of that equipment has reached the end of its economic life. It also takes influent that's undegridded and puts it into a pipeline west of the facility. You can see the image on the left, you see the red line west of the facility. That is a line that allows us to convey flow from the Marina Valley plant to the Paris Valley plant under certain circumstances. The current system, again, it's undegridded. It's also very poor in its ability to actually control. It's not utilized very much on a regular basis, but as volumes increase coming in, this function is going to become more of an important function, and we want to be sure it's maintained. Next slide, please. Going back to the plant 2B, you can see the blow-up of this image. And on the bottom middle of the page, you can see plant 2A is brown, and the upper portion of plant 2 is somewhat gray, and that is the portion of plant 2B that is actually going to be brought into operation under plant 2B. On this image, you see blue lines, and the blue lines represent the scope of work that will be done in the Marina Valley Flow Diversion and Centrate Conveyance Project. Up on the top right, there is a dewatering building, and there is a blue line that extends from that going to a little pump station that would pump centrate over to the CARB vessel. And then there are blue lines extending to the south, and the very bottom of the page is that line we showed you on the west side of the facility where you can send flow to the Paris Valley plant. The functionality this is going to provide is very useful for the facility, allow us to send degridded influent to the Paris plant as well as centrate and RAS, providing a lot of flexibility to the operation. And again, it takes advantage of the elements that are being included in the Plant 2B project. This image clearly identifies the scope. This is the scope of work that we felt was a very well-defined scope of work. And this is what the consultants were addressing when they proposed on this project. I have the next slide, please. Our selection process for the consultant. Back in March, we issued an RFP to 6 qualified consulting firms. We received 2 proposals in April. We had a selection committee review those proposals from engineering operations and also from our environmental and regulatory compliance staff. The selection committee reviewed the proposals for project understanding, relevant qualifications, capacity and availability of the firms to perform the work, and also our past experience working with the firms. Slide 8, please. This slide provides a summary of the consultant selection summary. And again, we had 2 proposals, one from Corolo Engineers and one from Hazen. The selection committee preferred the Corolo proposal. They had a little bit better explanation of the background and purpose of the project. However, both firms were very, very competitive and highly qualified, and that's recognized in the scores being very, very similar. With regards to fee, Corolo had a fee of $374,405. We reviewed that fee proposal in detail, and we feel it's very commensurate to the project. I want to point out that Hazen's fee is substantially higher, and it's really hard to understand why that fee was higher. I reached out to them to try to get some additional information on how they came up with their estimate to be sure that there was not a misunderstanding on the scope of work. Even within Hazen, they had differences of opinion on the value of the project. They decided to go with a high value, and I think it's fortunate that the selection committee preferred the Corolla team at a fee that's reasonable for the project. Next slide. The consultant scope of work includes preliminary and final design, construction sequence and phasing recommendations, a safety pre-use analysis, bid document preparation, construction cost estimate, construction schedule, and bid services. Our proposed schedule, we're here this morning for you to consider the project. We would like to proceed immediately. We anticipate advertising the project next year and approaching you again in the middle of the year for construction and to get achieve a substantial completion in the middle of 2022. Recommendation to the board, award of contract to Corolla Engineers for the preliminary and final design of the Marina Valley Flow Diversion and Century Conveyance Project in the amount of $374,405. Admin awards of contracts necessary to complete the preliminary and final design and bid services, and an appropriation of $524,305 to fund the project through the bid and award phase. I'm available to answer questions at this time.
Do you have any questions of Eric? Either any of the directors on the phone? If not, then we'll approve, we'll recommend a motion and a second. It's been moved. Have a second?
Seconded.
It's been moved and seconded. Roll call, please.
Director Sullivan?
Aye.
Director Pauly?
Aye.
Director Corona?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Record?
Aye.
It's been unanimously approved. Thank you very much. With that, we'll go to agenda item 4B. Approve and authorize amendment to the agreement with HDR for $41,598 procurement of a high-performance valve for the San Jacinto Valley Raw Water Conveyance Facilities Project Phase 1 and additional appropriation in the amount of $600,000. Greg.
Good morning, Mr. President, fellow members of the board. I'm happy to present to you our San Jacinto Valley Raw Water Conveyance Facilities Project. Next slide. The project is a part of the San Jacinto Valley Water Banking Enhanced Recharge and Recovery Program. This program will provide the necessary conveyance facilities for the recharge operation in the East Valley, and then at a later date, we'll be able to extract that water for water supply. Next slide. Next one. And the project's also coincidentally a part of our Groundwater Reliability Plus initiative. By way of location, the project's located in the city of San Jacinto and Hemet, and it's a diagram of the project overview is shown here. We'll start with the phase one project. The phase one project consists of EM25, or the service connection with Metropolitan Water District. Immediately downstream will be a Eastern-owned flow control facility and chlorination facility. We'll also site a phase two booster pumping station. And then the phase one pipeline will consist of a little over 2 miles of 60-inch diameter pipeline that will terminate just beyond Hemet Water Filtration Plant. The phase two project will continue in the future beyond 2030 and take us all the way out to the recharge operation near Mountain Avenue. The next slide. This particular exhibit shows the location of the project facilities located at the intersection of Warren and Esplanade. On the left, you can see the highlighted portion shows the Metropolitan parcel and the inland feeder pipeline. This is where we'll be situating the service connection known as EM25. And on the right are Eastern's facilities, which are the flow control facility and chlorination facility. And then thereafter, the pipeline will continue to the east. Next slide. This diagram shows a closer view of the Metropolitan facilities known as EM25. We'll be constructing a valve vault over top of the existing 12-foot diameter inland feeder pipeline. And then immediately downstream, we'll be constructing yet another vault to house metering facilities. Next slide. This is a section diagram of the interconnection with Metropolitan showing the top connection to the inland feeder. It comes up through valve vault and then to a metering vault. The 42-inch high-performance butterfly valve will be situated in that first valve vault, and that is the valve we're looking to procure in advance of construction. Next slide. So during design, we evaluated a variety of valves. We evaluated Bray, Henry Pratt, Dzurek, and Kurimoto. And after detailed review, we found that only two of the manufacturers can meet Metropolitan's strict requirements. Schedule and timing were important factors. As you can see from the diagram below, we have preliminary pricing and lead times for these valves. Dzurek was quoted at about $500,000 with the valve and actuator and related appurtenances, and Kurimoto was slightly higher than that. However, Dzurek was 36 to 52 weeks in lead time, whereas Kurimoto was twice that time. So we're looking to advance final pricing and negotiations with Dzurek to advance this valve and receive this valve before construction and upon written approval by Metropolitan. I'm expecting their written approval actually today. Next slide. In addition, we'll need a contract amendment to continue the work through the bid phase of the project. It'll include project management, additional coordination with our stakeholders, primarily Metropolitan, but also the cities, San Jacinto and Hemet. In addition, we need some additional support for the procurement process, as well as some revisions that Metropolitan requested here at the final stage of design. With that, after taking a credit of $25,000 on the contract, we have a total amendment of approximately $42,000 going forward. Next slide. So we look to immediately advance the procurement upon approval to advertise the project in August, and so that we have the valve just in time for just-in-time delivery for an arranged shutdown of the inland feeder in March of 2021. With that, we would look to complete the project sometime in October of 2021. Next slide. So with that, at this time, I recommend we advance an amendment contract with HDR for approximately $42,000. Also approve other ancillary contracts to complete the project, as well as approve and authorize the procurement of the valve and actuator with Dzurek, subject to written approval from Metropolitan, as well as additional appropriation in the amount of $600,000 to fund project costs through the bid award phase of the project. Next slide. With that, are there any questions?
Any questions? No? Thank you.
Great. Thank you.
With that, we'll entertain a motion for approval.
I'll move the item.
I'll second.
It's been moved and seconded. Roll call, please.
Director Sullivan?
Aye.
Director Polly?
Aye.
Director Corona?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
You said aye.
Okay, yeah. Sorry. Director Ruckert?
Aye.
Motion passes unanimously, thank you. With that, we'll go to agenda item six, which is our information items and the presentations. A is for fiscal year 2019-2020, second quarter enterprise performance measures update. John.
Good morning, President Sullivan, members of the board. It's my privilege once again to present the district's report card on total performance across all functions of the district for second quarter of 1920. So just so I'm clear, are you driving or am I driving?
If your mouse is working, you can drive. It doesn't seem like the equipment is
cooperating. Okay. Yeah, just say what slide you're on.
We got this.
Thank you, John.
No problem. And as usual, I have backup. So I have Andy Regalado, our systems analyst, on the line, and I will defer all the difficult questions to Andy. So with that, we have our balanced scorecard across all five functions. We did spend significant time drilling into these at the committee. That's gonna allow me to just touch the highlights today at the board's setting. So with that, let's go next slide. First efficiency measure is our water operating cost per acre foot delivered. You'll see one variance there. It's during the month of December. So while that sounds like much farther than 5 months ago, I can tell you that If you recall, November and December were significantly much more mild weather than we were expecting. A lot of cloudy days, a lot of precipitation, low ET value, and sales dropped significantly, which spiked our unit cost. Additionally, Metropolitan shut down EM-17, which is our Lake Skinner connection, for 10 calendar days for some maintenance that San Diego County Water Authority was performing down south. Next slide. This is our wastewater treatment operating cost per million gallons treated. Wastewater staff is doing an incredible job of managing those plants, keeping the chemical costs low. The only excursion here was the month of August. And as a trend, you'll see August spike across multiple financial metrics. That's because that was a three pay period month. So as you know, staff get paid every 2 weeks. 2 months out of the year, three of those pay periods hit our book, and it just so happens that was the month of August. A lot of our functions within the wastewater system are labor intensive. Next slide. Recycle water operating cost break foot delivered against the trend very well. Because demands were down, unit costs were up. We see that spike in August once again. Really no concerns here at all that I could point out. Next slide. Self-generated power, this one is not trending the way we liked. We began to put it on what we call a watch list, where we're gonna get more frequent updates. If you could click within the graphic. Perfect. What we're looking at here is actual performance for the three energy generation systems. So that is our solar photovoltaic systems, our microturbines, and our fuel cells that we operate at our plants. And for the month of November, you'll see we had zero energy produced by our microturbines. And because of the weather, the production out of our solar arrays dropped, as well as the fuel cell had some maintenance issues that took them offline for a period of days. All three of these systems have contract obligations that, if not met, EMWD receives credit back for the downtime. So in all three cases and all three systems, we receive that credit and will receive that credit. But it's just an indication of what we measure and how our contractors and vendors perform to the district. As we roll out of efficiency measure, are there any questions? With that, we'll keep going. Customer hours out of service. One excursion here for the quarter was in October. This was a planned outage. Director Sullivan, this is within the city of Paris. It was for a valve replacement, and a number of residents were offline during that day, but it was a planned outage. They were notified, and I think well managed. Next slide. Wastewater treatment reliability, this is the measure of uptime of all four plants. We've continued to increase that target at the request of operations and maintenance. Now the goal is to keep all four plants operating at 98% or better. For the month of November, we're proud to report that wastewater plant staff achieved a 100% uptime for that entire month, and that's one of the few times that we've seen it across all four plants, especially when you consider that two of these plants are undergoing major plant maintenance and upgrades at the same time. So really outstanding work from our operations and maintenance group. Next slide. Wastewater spills of collection and RWR systems. These are reportable spills. We did have one spill in December, which took us to a target of 3. This spill turned out the root cause was the dumping of pool grout into the sewer system, which continues to be an industry concern and an industry problem. Oftentimes, it's very difficult to determine the source of that pool grout, typically not dumped right outside of the construction site. But what happens is it goes in as liquid and then sets up and causes a blockage, sometimes even months post-dumping. So we did lose 4,000 gallons, but we recovered over 2,000 gallons of that spill.
Did we find out who the culprit was?
I don't believe we have yet, no. Sir. Next slide. Our service measure of customer satisfaction of last experience survey. So at the beginning of the fiscal year, we set this to a 5-point scale. We achieved close to 4.6, 4.8 for the entire quarter. This is a result of call volume dropping, but more so because of the part-time staff strategy that that department deployed. With that part-time staff strategy, they could staff up appropriately during peak hours and reduce our call wait time significantly, and we see the immediate results of that. Next slide. Safety injury illness rate continues to trend very well, and you can see that we're right at 2.32. Beginning of fiscal year, safety and risk recommended creating a stretch goal of 3.0. This is well below industry average, and happy to report EMWD continues to achieve, perform well on this front. Next slide. G&A costs as a percent of total operating costs, so we see us trending well right at the target of 11.8% district-wide. No concerns here. Next slide. Net operating margin, this is dollars in versus dollars out. The blue line is our historic average. The only excursion we see here is the month of August. Again, that's the three pay periods per month that, again, it hits our books twice a year. No other comments or concerns here. Next slide. Our last metric, it's new for this fiscal year. It's our capital improvement program actual to budget performance. So every year we forecast our expenditures. We recommended, and the general manager accepted this as an enterprise metric. This is our performance of our actual dollars against our forecasted budget cumulative month to month. Happy to report that we are on target for $45 million. Through the month of December, we were targeted to spend just greater than that, $45.6 million. So we are performing very well. The biggest challenge, and I've said it before, is repeating this performance in the upcoming fiscal year.
This is a good surrogate target indicator for project execution, and that's why we track it in this way.
Yeah, that's great project management, actually.
Thank you. It's not just our implementation, but our ability to plan, and so something that we're starting to get pretty good at. So very, very proud of this metric. Next slide, please. With that, we have three measures that we're watching. Water operating costs, talked about that. Most of that was weather dependent. Recycled operating costs per acre foot delivered. We may look at that target at the beginning of fiscal year. And self-generated power. Again, we're on a more frequent update of that data. And with that, I'll be happy to answer any questions the board may have.
Have any questions? Any questions out of the phone? Nice job. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you, Andy.
Thank you, Andy. Okay, with that, we'll take about a 10-minute break for the cause and to fix the presentation mouse.